Good evening and welcome back to the Steve Carsey and the Kids Show. We have an amazing show lined up for tonight. The Rock Kabatko, will be coming on the show tonight at Masters Sports. He'll be our special guest coming on at about 9:15. We'll be covering the AL East tonight. We have some big news to report in the world of baseball signings and offseason moves. We'll talk about that too as we get into this week's show, this week's Steve Carsey and the Kids Show.
Welcome to Carsey and the Kid. With your hosts, Steve Carsey and Alexander Danilov.
And again, welcome back to Steve Carsey and the Kid Show. I am the kid, he is Steve Carsey. Say hello to the folks, Steve.
How we doing out there? Glad you can join us again. Got another great show taking care of the AL East. Great guest in Rock Kabatko, like he said, and we're just looking forward to having an amazing show as usual, getting into depth, with all of the AL East clubs and breaking them down and ultimately giving you our picks on how we feel like they're going to finish.
And we have some signings to talk about. One that we will be talking about with our guest coming up. We'll talk about that in a few minutes. The rest of the moves, some big moves and some minor moves to mention as well. Not huge moves. Ian Desmond was not signed, so we'll tell you that up front. We're not going to be teasing you about that. Ian Desmond's still out there. But tonight's show, central theme is the AL East. So far we've covered the AL Central, and we've covered the NL East. And tonight we get to cover the AL East, so I'll let you introduce the first team for tonight's special edition of the team-by-team, division-by-division analysis, Steve.
Yeah, absolutely. We are going to start off tonight by introducing the Boston Red Sox and what they have done, with their ball club, moving Hanley Ramirez. He's been all over the place. They're actually going to move him to first base. We'll see how the Panda bounces back this year. They're going to get a healthy Dustin Pedroia back. Their outfield is fairly young. They got the intriguing Mookie Betts, who has made a splash on the scene, is a tremendous player, can play all three outfield spots. He's actually played a little bit of infield at points in time. And then, the signing of David Price, I think, is the biggest acquisition of the offseason. And, something that I think, Dombrowski wanted to do with coming over from the Tigers and really putting this team, getting an ace and putting them back on the map. But is it going to be enough, Alex, to overtake some of these other clubs who are very strong?
Mm-hmm. Now, the key word for the Boston Red Sox, the theme, I guess, for the last couple of years has been change and in some ways evolution, right? So we look at the way that the team has changed, and really the only constant that we can see over the last several years has been Big Papi David Ortiz, and this is going to be his final season. He's 40 years old. He said this is it. He's had a great career, steroid allegations aside. He's had a great career. He's had some of the biggest hits in baseball history, both regular season and playoffs, and has been a Yankee killer his whole career. But now you look at the way that the team lines up, and look at the rest of these guys. Outside of Papi and Hanley Ramirez, the rest of the team is 29 and younger. Pablo Sandoval, the next one to reach age of 30. The Pedroia, actually 32 as well. The rest of the team is very, very young. Even on the pitching staff, they're still pretty young. You have David Price as the second oldest guy behind Clay Buchholz, their newest addition. He's going to be the second lefty in their rotation, project the rotation. Eduardo Rodriguez is going to be the other guy. But if you look at what this rotation looks like right now, you have David Price, Clay Buchholz, Rick Porcello, Eduardo Rodriguez, and Joe Kelly. And quite frankly, I don't see this as a team that's ready yet. I think they need another one or two guys. They definitely need another second guy behind David Price. David Price is going to be, in my opinion, Steve, he's going to be looked at as their stopper this year, because if you look at the back end of that, and if you look at the other guys anyway behind David Price, a long line of health issues and inconsistency with Buchholz. Rick Porcello, they gave a massive contract to last year. I believe it was 4 years, $82 million, and I went berserk on that one. But I just don't see this team as one, from the pitching perspective, that can compete with some of the other teams in this club. I'd like to get your take pitching-wise, because offensively, they look really good. You mentioned some big names there, Mookie Betts. You have Pedroia, you have Xander Bogaerts, who broke out last year. Again, Poppy, Hanley Ramirez, who will likely bounce back. He had a really bad year last year with some injury issues also. Big Panda, you expect him to have pretty much a 15 to 18 home run season, 75-80 RBIs. He's more a postseason guy. Ruzny Castillo should see more plate appearances this season. Blake Swihart and Jackie Bradley Jr., who showed a lot of flashes last year. So the offense, I'm not worried about if I'm a fan, but it's that pitching staff that really scares me.
Yeah, you know, you got your number one, who they brought in, and David Price, who's pitching the AL East, obviously, with Tampa Bay, and has ridden that wave. So he's a guy you're not really going to be concerned with. As you said, you have some guys behind him who've had some injury problems over the past couple of years. You know, Porcello's been fairly healthy, but Buchholz and Kelly and Rodriguez, you don't really know what you're going to get out of those three guys. You just hopefully they stay healthy and they're able to compete. But, you know, what concerns me a little bit is, the bridge to their closer, Craig Kimbrell, who was a great acquisition, brought him over to close games, and he's, you know, ultimately one of the great closers in the major leagues today. But, the trouble is that the middle of those games, are they going to extend the starting pitchers and try to get them further along? Or are they going to try to shorten the game with Uhera and Tuazza and some of those other guys in the pen? But, they're going to really have to overachieve in the back end of their starting rotation for them to compete for a full season. I see the one and two guys, holding their own. I see, Price trying to come in, be a leader, be a guy that these other guys can follow. But, ultimately at the end of the day, I just don't think that their pitching staff as a whole is strong enough to withstand what's in that division.
Mm-hmm. And I'm going to be the wild card here, Steve, and I'm going to say that I'm actually nervous, and as great as Craig Kimbrell has been throughout his career, this is the first time he's going to be in AL. He's going to be in a very tough division, and granted, the league has been weak together. There's a lot more interleague played throughout the season. It's not just dedicated times in the year. This is Kimbrell's first opportunity to be in the AL, and you got the DH aspect too, and you have it's DH versus who we would normally face if it was a ninth place hitter or eighth place hitter in some rare cases would be a pinch hitter. He's going to be going up against DHs and bigger and better bats in a lot of cases. So I would be a little nervous watching Craig Kimbrell, especially considering how bad he started last year. He settled down towards the end, did have 39 saves, 87 Ks in 59 in the third innings, and 2.58 ERA. So certainly not poor seasons by any stretch of the imagination, but not the Kimbrell we've seen. So there was a little bit of regression last year. It could have just been being uncomfortable, being in San Diego Padres uniform after being traded from the Braves. Could be a lot of things, but he's now traded to Boston, where obviously he's going to be expected to perform for a potential a playoff team. So it'll be interesting to see how that bullpen, as you mentioned, Steve, is able to go through this whole season, and if they're going to be if they're going to be the stoppers for the pitching staff that will allow the offense to do what they do, score a bunch of runs and win by a few runs more than they give up.
Yeah, I mean it's a question mark, as you said. The big bats at the ninth inning, guys that can come off the bench with Kimbrell. But again, I mean, he's proven over the course of his career that he's a high leverage pitcher. He's a guy who will continue to go out there and compete. And when you have the kind of stuff that he has, even if you make a few mistakes, it's pretty tough. So, it's just for me, in my opinion, it's just a matter of them able to get to the back end and get to Kimbrell with the lead. And, time will tell with that. As we say quite a bit on the show, I mean, they look very good on paper offensively, and we'll just have to see how they, how they mesh and how they're going to start generating runs this year. Are they going to be more of a small ball team, or are they going to try to continue to play big ball at Fenway Park and try to be a home run hitting club?
Mm-hmm. And one of the guys that we haven't mentioned was one of the players that was actually one of their best last year, and that's Brock Holt, who, if you look at the depth chart for the Boston Red Sox, it's actually quite fascinating. He's listed everywhere, He's listed on every position except catcher. So this is one of those guys, super utility, definitely an X factor for them. When you have guys that go down with injuries like Canley Ramirez, Pablo Sandoval potentially, and you don't really know what's going to happen in the outfield with Castillo and Jackie Bradley Jr., you do know Mookie Betts is going to be there, but you don't know the rest. It's great for them to be able to have a guy like Brock Holt to come off, either come off the bench or to just be just a guy that can play a different position every single day. That's very crucial, and every winning team has somebody like that that can do that kind of stuff. So that is the Boston Red Sox. I'm not overly confident in them this year from my perspective, but I think they're about a year or two away from being a true contender again, and by year or two, that could be shortened greatly if a guy like Joe Kelly steps up and becomes that pitcher that we believe he can be with that smoke fastball, or if they end up adding another pitcher via trade or otherwise. So that is the Boston Red Sox. We're going to move on now to talk about the Toronto Blue Jays, the surprise Blue Jays who just really just broke out in a big way last year, Steve. They added the aforementioned David Price. They brought in Tulowitzki, traded away Jose Reyes. They made a whole bunch of moves. Oh, let's not forget they also traded for the eventual MVP and Josh Donaldson, who was their team leader, both on the field, off the field. He was the heart and soul of that team in his first year there. And that's no disrespect to Joey Bats, Jose Bautista, but it's just that they added a guy who carried them, I believe, all the way, and a lot of big hits. The Blue Jays, no longer with David Price. They still have Tulo. They still have a pretty solid team. They're going to have a lot of guys healthy this year, the guys that came on strong at the end of last year, like Stroman, who was pretty much unhittable when he came back. He made the Yankees look like babies. Like, that was the first time that they were playing against a major league pitcher. So he had great stuff out there, great stuff in the playoffs as well. The Blue Jays are a very interesting team here, Steve.
That's kind of the word that I was going to use. This is an interesting dynamic for me. You know, you got the Toronto Blue Jays who had lost their GM this offseason, and Alex Anthopoulos, and then Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins come in and start taking over this ball club. They start adding pieces here and there. Jose Bautista and Encarnacion are both up after the 2016 season. Offensively, they're going to be a juggernaut again this year. It's that starting pitching in the AL East after Stroman. Estrada had a fabulous playoff, but is he going to be able to, you know, withstand the rigors of the AL East on a consistent basis after he goes through the, through the league a couple times? It's tough. I mean, they signed him to a 2-year deal and was able to lock him up. You know, they gave Happ a 3-year deal. Traded for Chavez from Oakland, so he's definitely a different dynamic. And then they have Ari Dickey, who's going to be solid in the middle of their rotation. But the back end for them again is really, really tough. You know, there's going to be a closer competition between Thorin and Asuna. You know, Asuna's going to be 21. You've seen what he did in the playoffs last year, how he handled the high leverage situations and the pressure as a 20-year-old closing in the AL East. So these guys offensively, again, are going to be tremendous. How is their pitching going to hold up? I continuously harp on teams that, have questionable starting pitching, especially in the AL East. It's coveted around the league, and it's very tough to come by getting a top three. You're not even really asking for a top five, but a top three that can stay healthy and put up some innings for you. So, I see the Toronto Blue Jays really competing in the AL East. I have them almost, at the top of my list. It's one of those things where if they can do what they did last year offensively and put up those type of runs, it might hide a little bit of the weakness in their pitching staff.
Yep. And Steve, actually, I side with you on this completely. I really like this team from a lot of different perspectives. I think they could have done more. for that bullpen, but I really like them bringing in Drew Storen. I really like the setup here where you have Osuna, who was their closer last year, 20 saves, 75 strikeouts in 69 and two-thirds innings. You have Drew Storen, who was looked like he was on his way to a great closing season last year, and then everything just fell apart for the Nationals. They brought in Papelbon. There's a whole big mess there. They have Brett Cecil, who has experience closing. Another solid year for him. 54 in the third inning, 70 strikeouts, 2.48 ERA along with the five saves. And one guy that I think is a big X factor for them is Aaron Sanchez. 7-6 last year, only 92 in the third innings. Not a huge sample size, huge data size, but a guy who could start, a guy who could relieve. Gave him a 3.22 ERA last year, 61 strikeouts in that 92 innings. So not a guy that's going to blow you away like a Stroman, potentially, but is a guy that's going to give you a lot of depth. And then you have, again, the bullpen guys that they have outside of that, Delabar and some of the others, they have experience, but I do like those back three. As long as they're healthy, I think that they can be consistent for them. And let's not forget, they have Russell Martin there. And we also actually, our guest, Rock Kabatko, actually just dialed in, so we'd like to bring him on. And then we'll get back to talking about the Blue Jays and actually the Orioles as well. So Rock Kabatko is Orioles reporter for Madison Sports. We're so happy to have you on, Rock.
Hey, it's my pleasure.
Thanks. Yeah, Rock, thanks for joining us. This is Steve Carsey. Glad to have you on and get some insight into the AL East a little bit. You cover it there with the Orioles, and I kind of want to talk a little bit about them since you're very knowledgeable with that ball club. You know, I'm sure you've heard and reported on it. Looks like they've kind of upgraded their rotation today, signing Gallardo, to that 3-year, $35 million deal as reported. I kind of want to get your opinion on where Baltimore is this offseason as far as the rest of their rotation goes. You know, are they still interested in Tim Lincecum? And is signing Gallardo going to be enough with what they have in their rotation right now?
Yeah, well, I think it's going to have to be. And, you know, we've been saying all along that no matter who they added, and they really were targeting Gallardo since early in the free agent process, they still need their returning guys to have the big bounce back years. Chris Tillman, Miguel Gonzalez specifically. If those guys don't rebound from disappointing 2015 seasons, it's not going to matter what else happens. They're not going to make the playoffs again this year. They need those guys to bounce back, and they're leaning heavily on Kevin Gausman, their former first-round pick, to take that next big step here. For the first time, he's coming to camp definitely as a starter. He's going to break camp as a starter. He's not going to be on that shuttle between AAA and the majors. They're giving him the ball every 5 days and turning him loose. And they need him to step up, which they think he will. So there's still a lot of ifs, but I thought this was still a really good signing because it is a guy with 30 more starts for 7 straight seasons, a career 3.66 ERA, which is really impressive. I don't care, you know, who you are. That's impressive in this day and age. So, you know, he's a proven guy that you can plug in. He's the first or second spot in the rotation. On paper, they're certainly better now than they were. They had that big hole when Wei-Yin Chen left. And, you know, they like some of their in-house candidates, but they really did need a guy with a track record here. Now it makes them deeper in AAA and even in AA, guys that you're projecting that might start here. Even Despaigne, that they got from the Padres, he's got 3 minor league options that I can go ahead and ticket him for AAA, the guy that can come up later. Because as Buck Showalter says, you need about 8 or 9 starters every season. As for Lincecum, you know, it's hard for me to imagine where there'd be a spot right now unless he's signed a minor league deal. He seems intent on getting a major league deal. They're interested. They haven't watched him throw at this point. I'm just not sure with 5 starters set, unless you make a trade, where you would put him at this point on a major league deal.
Mm-hmm. Now, Rock, one of the guys whose name we've heard about for a long time, a big-time prospect, Dylan Bundy. You tweet about him before. You tweet a picture of him pitching off the mound. Let's get a status on him because he was slated to be the future of the Baltimore Orioles starting rotation. And, of course, injuries have derailed that, at least for now. Let's get a status on him. How does he look? What's he doing? How's his workload so far? How are they handling and managing him as he comes back from shoulder surgery?
Yeah, it's one of those so far so good things. I mean, he's throwing the same schedule as everybody else. The restraints are off. The governor's off, as Buck likes to say, using a car term. And he is throwing off a regular mound, full bullpen sessions. They're turning him loose. Now, he has no shot at competing for a rotation spot this season just because he doesn't have enough innings built up. It's going to have to be bullpen, and he's out of minor league options, so you got to keep him. So at this point, you know, you hope that you don't have to treat him like a Rule 5 pick who you have to keep in your bullpen like you did with Jason Garcia this past year and have to really protect him and, you know, pick and choose when you can use him. That really handcuffs a manager who doesn't have a lot of flexibility in the bullpen anyway. Most of these guys are out of options. So, you know, that was tough with Garcia last year before they put him on the DL. They're really just hoping they can get Dylan through a season healthy, start to build up those innings, and let him compete for a rotation spot 2017. He said he feels great, but, you know, it's been a string of bad luck. He was shut down in May at Double-A Bowie with the sore right shoulder, the calcium buildup behind the shoulder, which is kind of rare for a pitcher. And then the Arizona Fall League, he had a couple starts, felt good, and all of a sudden there was some tightness in his forearm. So as a precaution, they shut him down. And he was thinking, here we go again. He just can't seem to get a break. But, again, so far so good. He comes to camp. He's feeling really good. Throwing off a full mound. And they're just hoping that he can be healthy and contribute in that bullpen, maybe in multi-inning type role, and then again, you know, compete for a rotation spot 2017 with Gausman, with Hunter Harvey, another former first-round pick, Bundy and Harvey are the top two prospects in the organization, and bring up more of these young guys in the rotation to save a little bit of money because, you know, they've been trying to grow the arms and buy the bats, and even though they just invested in Gallardo, they would really like to be able to have their own homegrown guys start moving up into this rotation.
Yeah, absolutely. They're you know, like you said, their bullpen will be with Bundy in it. If he's able to, you know, get those innings out of the pen, I think will really help that ball club bridge the gap to the back end with Zach Britton. But one other thing I wanted to ask you, you look over this lineup and the guys that they have, I mean, obviously Machado and Davis and Jones in the middle of their lineup. You know, they've added Trumbo in a trade, you know, Jonathan Scope, you know, got J.J. Hardy as well, and Weider's coming back on that qualifying offer deal. I'm hearing a little bit out there that they may try to get, you know, Dexter Fowler and had him in the mix. I mean, it's a pretty talented lineup, 1-9 already. Is it a possibility that Fowler gets added?
I think so. I talked to someone tonight in the organization. They're really determined to sign him as well and surrender that compensation pick that they got from the Marlins for losing Wei Yan Chen. Or the compensation pick they were awarded. It's interesting because they went from having six of the first 91 picks and stressing how important this draft was going to be for them because they want to restock the farm system with young arms to all of a sudden surrendering the 14th overall pick, and now for Fowler it would be the 28th overall. But they're really willing to do that because they just think Fowler's a guy that would be very important for them and fill a lot of needs. He can play right field, switch hitter, bat atop the lineups. He can move Machado down. He has a career 363 on base percentage, and they always rank near or at the bottom of the majors in on base percentage every season. That was an area they really wanted to improve in. So this guy just makes sense for a lot of reasons. He's been almost exclusively a center fielder, but they're sure he can transition to right. So they really are targeting him. I talked to somebody tonight that seemed very confident they were going to go ahead and work out a deal. I've heard rumblings about how they're talking maybe 2 years, around $24 million with an option. That's what the discussions are right now, and they're really pushing to get it done. And it would be there's not going to be a shortage of runs with this lineup. That's going to come back again to the rotation. They'll score runs. They've got a very good bullpen. They've got a good defense. They got a good manager in place. Will this rotation be good enough to get them back in the playoffs?
Now the newest addition to their rotation, Gallardo, obviously, there's somebody that they've been targeting for a long time. 3 years, $35 million deal was the deal that they signed. But you retweeted Buster Olney back on February 10th, and there was a three-year deal in the range of $40 to $45 million. Now, the Orioles have spent close to $250 million so far in this offseason. That's before Dexter Fowler move. Now, what exactly happened with the Gallardo deal that actually that decreased the value of it? Is it something that is helped that they're concerned health-wise, performance-wise? Is it something else? Was it a misreport? Because that's a pretty big number, a pretty big drop. I usually hear see the number go up a little bit after reported or stay around the same. So it's a pretty big drop. Interesting to what happened there.
Yeah, I'm curious too. Honestly, I mean, I don't have all the answers on this. I just know that you know, at one point he was looking for a four or five year deal, and then he's just one of those guys that, you know, a victim of the qualifying offer. I mean, some guys, it wasn't a problem. Somehow Ian Kennedy still got a sweet, sweet deal, even though, you know, he was going to cost a first round pick. Yeah, but why does a guy like Gallardo end up being hurt by it? We were talking about this today with Buck in the post-workout session. It's just a curiosity. Same reason that Fowler's still in the market. Same reason Ian Desmond's still in the market. It hurts some guys and it doesn't hurt others. But and Gallardo was one of the ones that was hurt by it. And the Orioles, you know, when I was checking why they went from being on the verge, it seemed like assigning him to suddenly more than a week passed. And I was told that his camp had moved away from the figure they thought would get it done. So clearly they were trying to get a little bit more. And then I guess it really came down to that option year. In fact, if the Orioles gave the option, there's some deferred money, which seems to be their thing to do in the offseason when you looked at the deferred money with Chris Davis. And the figures made sense for them, and obviously it made sense for Gallardo, who I'm sure is getting pretty eager to sign with somebody when you get to this stage of camp. So, you know, it really works out for both sides. But the Orioles were firm. They weren't going to give an opt-out. That could become a problem. I think once they were able to work on the option year and when you look at what the guaranteed money would be with that $13 million option, I think both sides were comfortable with it.
Mm-hmm. Once again, Rock, thank you so much for coming on the show. For those that want to follow you on Twitter, you have an amazing and very lengthy Twitter feed. You're very active, especially now with spring training upon us, and pitches and catches having reported, a lot of deals getting finalized, people getting called up, designated, all that stuff. I strongly encourage baseball fans as a whole, not just Oriole fans, to follow you on Twitter. Your Twitter handle is MassinRock. It's MASN. RLCH. And again, thank you so much for coming on to talk about the AL East and the Orioles in particular.
Hey, it's my pleasure. Anytime. Thanks, guys.
Appreciate it. Thanks, Rock. So with that, so we kind of covered a lot of the Orioles there. We will talk about them a little bit as well, just give our take on that. But let's shift back to the Blue Jays here, Steve, because there's obviously so much to talk about with them. Again, I do feel comfortable with the back end of their bullpen there. Their starting rotation's a little scary, but again, if you get a repeat from a guy like Marco Estrada, who really broke out, as you mentioned before, 181 innings, not going to give you a lot of strikeouts, does walk a good amount of guys with 55 walks last year. Over that workload, 3.13 ERA, had a lot of big games for them, a lot of very important starts. You have J.A. Happ coming back to Toronto, 172 innings last year between a split time, and had a great second half with the Pittsburgh Pirates, almost unbeatable, having pitched 172 innings last year, 151 strikeouts, gives them some depth. But the only guy here that I believe is the only – thing close to a sure thing, 200 inning sure thing here, Steve, is R.A. Dickey, who's been kind of spotty over his time. He has somewhat of a rubber arm because of that knuckler, but he's not the guy that was with the Mets, and everyone was like, yo, we have to get him. We have to get this guy. He's amazing. He's figured it out. He's done it. He's an average pitcher. I'd rather have him on my team if I need him than obviously not have him because he's kind of annoying to face against. He's one of those guys that can stifle you. But he's really the only guy in that team that I can count on for 200 innings, which means that there's a lot more pressure being put on that bullpen. So you're going to need a guy like Aaron Sanchez, I mentioned before, to step up. And on the catching side, they have some really good catchers here. Of course, Russell Martin there, all-star catcher. You have DeAndre Navarro, who was a catcher, all-star catcher in the past. He's not the same guy he was several years ago when he was an all-star, but still a nice backup for Russell Martin, who doesn't really like to miss many games. 129 games last year, though. Dalton Pompey is the other guy that's very interesting to me here, Steve. We saw Kevin Pillar have a really good season last year, kind of out of nowhere. Didn't really know how long he was going to stay up there and how long he was going to do as well as he was, because this really was Dalton Pompey's job, so to speak, and he was the guy that they had counted on. But Pillar, 278 average, 76 runs, 12 dingers, 56 RBIs and 25 stolen bases. A guy who has a lot of speed, and a guy who, if you put him out there, if he gets on base with those guys hitting behind him, it's awfully dangerous. If you add Dalton Pompey, who in his rookie year disappointed, I actually thought I had him listed as my rookie of the year for last year, just because of all the tools and skills he had. If he can develop into somewhat of what Pillar did, and Pillar takes the next step, I mean, this is a scary team. 232 home runs last year. It's scary.
No, it absolutely is scary offensively. You know, their lineup one through nine is tremendous, and You know, as you said, you know, Dalton Pompey, if he's a toolsy guy, and if he's able to, you know, produce like they expect him to, you know, moves from a fourth outfielder maybe to a rotation and plays consistently and gets consistent at bats throughout the year. But you know, one thing I do have to add on their pitching staff, I think this is going to be a little bit of a concern. Is the workload of Stroman coming into this year. You know, he had the injury last year, only made 4 starts in the regular season, covering 27 innings, and then pitched in the postseason and made 3 starts and pitched 19 and a third. So, you know, you're only looking at a workload of 46 innings the year in 2015. So how they handle Stroman coming back and pitch counts and what he's going to do at that top of the rotation – is a little bit of a concern to me. I mean, you don't want to put too much pressure on this guy. He's going to be 24 years old going into the season, and to anoint him the ace and for somebody to carry a staff and throw 200 innings, you know, is a heavy burden to put on a young guy. Looks like he's very equipped to do that. You know, he looks cool and calm and collected when he's out on the mound, competes really well, but this is a mainstay in their rotation for a very long time, and I feel like they need to be careful with him and bring him along and do right by him.
Mm-hmm. And certainly, for lack of better words, definitely got to use kid gloves with him. He's got a great arm, great live arm, got a lot of energy, a lot of power, but you want to do it the right way, and you want to do it with long-term vision. Although they're in an awkward spot because they're built to win now, Steve, and you mentioned the guys that are going to be coming on the free agency market. They're not going to be able to re-sign all these guys, keep them together. It's going to be tough. It's going to be interesting to see what they do, and we'll be talking about it, obviously, throughout the year to see what they end up doing there. So with that, let's move over to the Baltimore Orioles and continue that, a team that was at 500 last year, 81-81, third in the AL East, after that remarkable season they had the year prior. Buck Showalter's done a great job here, but he's not on the field. You know, it all comes down to that. He had there was a lot of injury issues last year with different guys and inconsistency with different guys. But you did have some guys step up and show their stuff. Of course, you had Adam Jones do his thing with 27 home runs. Average dipped, which is a bit of a concern. You had Chris Davis bounce back, 100 runs, 117 RBIs, 47 home runs in the age of the of deflated home run stats and home run numbers. You had Manny Machado break out, 35 home runs, 102 runs, 20 stolen bases, which is really interesting. You didn't think that they'd allow somebody like him with the power and the injury history that he's had to run so much, but did have 35 home runs, 20 stolen bases, 20-20 guy last year. Then you have some other guys like J.J. Hardy, who's just not the guy he was, obviously, a few years ago. Only played 114 games, .219 batting average, really poor average for him last year. But then that pitching staff is so scary, Steve. So much inconsistency, so much so much instability. You have Chris Tillman, who's considered their ace. He's slotted as their number one pitcher for as of right now, before Gallardo and obviously before spring training, slotted as their number one, their ace. But 173 innings last year, 120 Ks, near 5 ERA with 64 walks. Not good numbers. Baldo Jimenez had somewhat of a bounce back year last year with 184 innings pitched. His win-loss total, 12-10, just barely over 500. 4.11 ERA, again, somewhat of a bounce back, but not the guy they thought they were going to get when they signed him a couple years back. As Rock mentioned, Miguel Gonzalez, one of those guys they need to bounce back. Kevin Gausman, they need more out of him. Only 112 innings last year, 4.25 ERA. Was pretty solid for the most part, considering the team wasn't really consistent from the pitching side, but he was one of their more consistent pitchers. Then you have some other guys like Vance Worley, who's in there now. They brought him in, and they have a couple other guys who are going to vie for that spot. But that looks like it's their rotation for now, plus Gallardo, obviously. But, yeah, again, you did have Jonathan Scope have a really good, really solid season, 15 home runs. Run and RBI total is not that crazy, but only 86 games, so about half the season to have 15 home runs. That's really exciting if you're an Orioles fan and if you're the front office to have somebody like him be able to do that. You have Jimmy Paredes also in 104 games, .275 average, 42 RBIs, 46 runs, and 10 dingers. So they have some depth on the team offensively, but that pitching staff is what really scares me, terrifies me, actually.
Yeah, I mean, you know how the AL East is. It's you know, a lot of good clubs, and they always play some tight games. You know, there's always a blowout here or there. But for me, the Baltimore Orioles are going to need to blow out some teams to consistently win games. I just, you know, it just scares me that that pitching staff, as you said and as you pointed out and as Rock pointed out, that they're not real. They're not real deep. I know that Buck Showalter says he likes to have seven or eight guys that that he would like if need be. But you know, sometimes, you know, picking and choosing seven or eight guys to put in that rotation will be tough if they come across some injuries. So again, time will tell. We'll see how you know, the rotation stands up to you know, the early games in the AL East with these ball clubs, and see if they can kind of keep their head above water and gain some momentum again going into you know, the middle of the season.
Mm-hmm. This was a team that was one of the best really all around a couple years ago, and this, it's pretty much the same team if you really look at it. They have some additions here with Trumbo, as you mentioned before. They have Hyun-Soo Kim and a couple others as well, and obviously some guys that are going to be called up. Hopefully we get to see Dylan Bundy this year, and they have a couple of other additions. Minus Wee and Chen, though, Steve, this is pretty much the same team. So Buck Showalter's done a great job getting pretty much the most out of guys that he can. And really, if you look at this pitching staff and how feeble it was last year, and I'm sorry for being harsh, but it is what it is, for him to have been able to produce an 81-81 record in that AL East when he had the Yankees, the Red Sox really weren't a factor, and the Rays towards the end weren't a factor, but the Rays were holding up there for a long time. And, of course, then you had the Blue Jays, who you play 19 times a year, and they beat everybody up last year. But still, it was a team that was there. Overall, their ERA was 4.05. As a team, you got to get that down a little bit. And, you know, this is a ball club who can do some things. Again, they were mediocre pitching-wise as a whole. With that 4.05 ERA, was eighth in the American League. They got to get that down a few more points. Not a few more points, but a few more runs across the year. It adds up to a big way, because that offense – will do some big things for you, and you imagine that Scope and Paredes and Trumbo will be able to help you and produce the way that they did last year. Trumbo is going to strike out a lot, but a .262 average for him is actually really good if you think about it. 22 home runs is big for them. They need that. He'll probably end up doing more than that. I split time with the Diamondbacks and the Mariners last year. Hitting in Seattle is not exactly the most fun batter can have, unless you're Nelly Cruz, who really doesn't care where he hits. But the Orioles do have a great and scary offense. That pitching staff is just as scary, though, from the other perspective, the other way. So the Orioles, interesting team. See what Buck Showalter ends up being able to accomplish with what they have there. So that means we have two teams left, Steve. We have Tampa. And we have the Yankees, but let's stick on Tampa, a team in a big-time rebuilding mode. They still have an amazing pitching staff, very, very young team still, and adding some pieces here and there, but for the most part, it's not a team that's going to compete this year, but they were just a couple games under 500 last year. They were a big thorn in the side for the American League. They had the best ERA, I mentioned that great pitching staff, the best ERA in the AL East, the fourth best ERA in the American League. This pitching staff, if they are going to compete this year, it's going to be a pitching staff story. And that's really without guys like Matt Moore, who was just coming back from Tommy John, was really awful last year and was hard to watch, a guy as good as he's been, former All-Star. But then you saw guys like Erasmo Ramirez, who took a step up finally in his career. You have Jake Odorizzi, who was really good for them, and Chris Archer. I mean, what an amazing season, Steve. 212 innings pitched and 252 strikeouts. It's amazing that he was only 12-13 on the season. Really, just an amazing pitcher. You know you're going to see a 20-win spot on his resume in the coming years.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, he's the leader of that staff, and that's their go-to guy. And this team here, the Tampa Bay Devil Rays, is a complete 180 from what the Baltimore Orioles are. Baltimore offense, you know, a little light on the pitching. And then, you know, who we're talking about, the Tampa Bay Devil Rays. See, it's in my head that the Devil Rays are who they are, but the Tampa Bay Rays are are really good in their rotation, as you pointed out, being fourth in the American League. But, you know, they're going to have a little bit of trouble scoring runs, you know. I mean, James Loney needs to have a bounce-back year. You know, they traded for Forsythe. You know, they got Keimer in center field, so I think he adds a little bit of a dynamic there with another year under his belt. And, you know, Kevin Cash is going to be one of those young managers and guys who got his feet wet last year, I think has a little bit better handle on what he wants to do and how he wants to go about it and, you know, what he wants to accomplish. Obviously, you have the face of their franchise and Evan Longoria. He needs to stay healthy. He needs to hit in that four hole for them and just be a constant in that lineup for them to compete on an everyday basis. And if they do, you get good pitching. You never know what can happen. I mean, pitching can really, you know, drive your team a long way, and they got the staff to do it.
Yeah, I mean, when you really look at this ball club, again, it's amazing what they were able to do last year. This is a scrappy team. There's no question about it. They have an amazing chemistry, an amazing build there. And you have your leader. You have Evan Longoria there. Don't forget some of the guys that they lost last year, from Jeremy Hellickson and some of the other guys. Alex Cobb, who's one of the leaders, he's going to be out until June 1 is really the date that they're showing right now. But might be out a little longer. I don't think he'll be back soon. But somebody, again, you got to hold with kid gloves. I expect Matt Moore to be more of the guy he was a couple years ago before the injury, before Tommy John, as opposed to the guy we saw last year. I think he just wasn't comfortable. There's a lot going on. And let's not forget, they also added Corey Dickerson to their team, who a couple years ago, last year, problem staying healthy with 65, only playing 65 games, 234 plate appearances, but did have 10 home runs in those 65 games. The year before, when he was really healthy, Steve, for the most part, 131 games, still missed 31. 312 batting average, 24 home runs, 76 RBIs. Young guy, going to be going into his age 27 season. This is a team that has some good players there. Of course, they have the veterans there that have been there for a bit, like James Loney, who's not going to wow you in any way. But they have a lot of complimentary players, and that's the whole thing. And then if you get a big season out of Longoria, who, you know, the question becomes, again, how long are they going to keep him around? How long does he want to stay? Do they want to keep him as a Ray forever? Yeah, they would love to retire his number and say that he was a Ray forever. But is it feasible financially while you're trying to do whatever you're trying to do? How much would he get back? Last year was one of his healthiest in a while, 160 games played, 270 batting average, 21 home runs. So he's either on the decline or just was a bad year for him overall. It's going to be this year. This is the year that defines that, where he is at this stage in his career. But they have a lot of complimentary pieces. Their closer, Brad Boxberger, simply a great season. 41 saves last year, 74 strikeouts, 63 innings pitched. Was 4-10, and that's very troubling. 3.71 ERA is certainly troubling as well. His first year, I believe he was a rookie last year, Steve. His first year closing for sure. But they do have some pieces on the pitching side. I believe they're going to end up moving one of those pitchers, if not before the season. I think they'll certainly be moved before the trade deadline, before July, is my guess. Steve, you still there?
I am.
Oh, okay. handing it off to you to see what you think about that bullpen.
Yeah, you know, I like that bullpen. You know, they made some acquisitions. They made some trades in the offseason. They got Farquhar, you know, McGee and Colome. They're good bridges to the back end in Boxberger. I mean, it's the old saying is, can that bridge carry you, you know, to some victories? And, you know, with what they have, I think their starting pitching is going to pitch a lot deeper into games than what people are anticipating. And, you know, with Archer, Cobb, Smiley, and Ordozi, even Ramirez, you know, stepped up and did a really nice job and has pitched deep in the game. So I just think that overall their pitching staff is as long as they're healthy, is going to carry this club and, you know, be a mainstay. I see them finishing in the top five in ERA again. As long as they stay healthy, they got a good defense, You know, Keimer's a tremendous center fielder, covers a lot of ground out there. You know, Jennings is very good, solid on the infield. So they revolve their team around pitching and defense, and then whatever kind of offense that they can muster up. And I do think that ultimately maybe they do trade a bullpen piece for maybe a bat that will help them out at some point. But they're just going to have to see where they're at in the process as the season is moseying along and how they're competing against the other teams in the AL East.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And with that, we only have one team left, and that's the New York Yankees. I do want to have add a couple more stats on the Rays before we get into our seventh inning stretch and then talking about the Yankees. We also have Steven Souza, we didn't even mention, 16 home runs last year in 110 games, a whole world of strikeouts, but this is a guy they traded. They got in the trade in that Will Myers deal. He was a key component to that three-way deal. They ended up getting him from Washington. So he's going to fit into this picture somehow. Probably going to be maybe a fifth or sixth hitter as he starts getting comfortable and cutting down the strikeouts. Again, you have Longoria, you have Corey Dickerson as their main guys. But here's the interesting thing here, Steve. In the AL division, with their 252 average was third in the division, sixth overall in the American League. But run-wise, they were dead last in the AL East with 644 runs and 14th in the American League. So that'll tell you a lot from that. There's a team that can get – they're a singles team. They're singles hitters, but they can drive in a lot of runs, and that's the problem there. And, you know, obviously we saw that with Longoria's stats, only 73 RBIs last year, 74 runs scored. So evenly based on that side, but the problem is you're not getting a lot of runs scored, even though you're getting some guys on base. So Tampa Bay Rays have to improve that if they want to get over the 500 hump. But certainly the first full year with all the losses that they had, all the subtractions, losing Joe Maddon, of all things, and ending the season at 80-82 is, I think, pretty impressive. If nothing else, there'll certainly be a thorn in the side in competing throughout the season. And the 500 season, I think, is in the cards for them as well with that pitching staff. And with that, we're going to get into our seventh inning stretch here, Steve. We're going to give ourselves a chance to catch up, catch a break. Catch your breaths, and then we'll get back into the team by team, division by division analysis. We got the Yankees to talk about. Of course, there's a lot to talk about there always with the Yankees, even though they've been kind of quiet this offseason, even though they've landed one of the best closers in the game, one of the best relief pitchers in the game. But we'll talk about that, and then we'll do our last licks. First, take a break.
Baseball. We talk about it. We live it. Stay here for more of Carce and the Kid with Steve Carce and Alexander Danilov.
And we're back. So we leave the Yankees for last, and it's not in any particular reason. We just decided to do it that way. The Yankees did have a kind of a quiet offseason, Steve, for the most part. Again, they did land the best closer in the game in the Aroldis Chapman after he was actually traded the first time to the Dodgers. That trade fell apart because of off-the-field issues, which he was cleared of. So they ended up getting him and being able to capitalize off that deal breaking through. So they have, after trading away Justin Wilson, still the best seventh inning, eighth inning, and ninth inning that I think I've ever seen and will probably see for a long time. I mean, you have three guys here that it's just almost unhittable, especially the way they were last year. You have the biggest problem here is that they're batting. They didn't really add any pieces here. Starlin Castro, I think, was a really good pickup entering his age 26 season. Second half last year really showed a lot of maturity as the Cubs went on to that amazing run and Jake Arrieta's historic second half. He played a big role in that. But this is a team that has a problem staying on the field. You look at I'm going to go through the projected opening day lineup here, Steve. You have Ellsbury, 32. You have Brett Gardner, who's been the topic of trade rumors for a while, 32 years old. You have Carlos Beltran, 38, who's a poster child for being unable to stay healthy. You have Mark Teixeira, about to turn 36. You have A-Rod, about to turn 41. You have Brian McCann, 32. Chase Headley, almost 32. You have Didi Gregorius, and Starlin Castro as your 8 and 9 hitters at age 26, and Starlin Castro is about to turn 26. So it was a big problem here. It's not age discrimination in any way, Steve, but you know what? When you're in a team that's in a quasi-rebuilding mode, this does not look like what a typical team in the rebuilding mode looks like.
No, it does not. Absolutely. It is one of those things where, you know, Brian Cashman, I think I read, they didn't sign a free agent this year. They made a bunch of trades, and they tailored their team to what they want to do, and that's to shorten the game. And as you said, you know, having those three guys at the back end with Miller, Betances, and Chapman, this has a chance to rival the 1990 Big Red Machine there with the Nasty Boys, Norm Charlton, Rob Dibble, and Randy Myers. These guys can be, you know, just as good or if not better than those three. I mean, you know, they got some guys coming back off of injuries. You know, Mark Teixeira is going to be one of those guys. You know, McCann can have a bounce back year. As you said, with Castro and Gregorius up the middle, you know, they got a lot of left-handed bats as well with that short porch in right field. So they're going to be able to put up some runs. You know, Alex Rodriguez had a tremendous year last year. Their outfield, as long as it stays healthy, I think can be very good. They're, you know, Carlos Beltran getting a little bit older, but Gardner at the top of that lineup. You know, and their starting pitching for me is not as bad as people have made it out to be. You know, I mean, Tanaka, we need to see if he's healthy. Pineda looks like he wants to try to get up there and throw 200 innings. I just don't know. I just don't know in the way that this bullpen is set up that many of these guys are going to get to 200 innings. They're going to try to shorten the game, and if starters can give them six, you know, they're going to go to these guys and ride their horses to you know, to a win if they have the lead after six innings. And, you know, that's the way they've, you know, set up the way that the team wants to be, and they're going to compete. I really think that they're going to surprise a lot of people in the AL East.
Mm-hmm. Now, this is a team that was seventh in the American League last year in batting average, second in runs and fourth in home runs, and nobody really knows how or why. But let's break that down a little bit. You have Mark Teixeira, who had 31 home runs in 111 games, did have a really poor batting average, but was driving in runs, very important here. 31 home runs, only 57 runs scored, 79 RBIs, very important, big producer for them. You have Alex Rodriguez, 250, but 33 home runs, 83 runs scored, 86 RBIs, and somehow found a way to steal four bases along the way, which is two more than Mark Teixeira. So you had six between those guys who never really run. But you have Brian McCann, 94 RBIs last year, and somewhat of a bounce back, but only hit 232. But again, making those hits count. So this is not the Yankee team that we saw several years ago that were kind of money ball kind of guys that had an average and a lot of patience, meaning that they found a way to get on base all the time. Obviously, they're getting on base. And the way that Joe Girardi built this team last year, he did not have the same lineup night in, night out. And that's something that's obviously problematic for any manager. And I think this is another year where Joe Girardi was very successful in what he was able to do. Second in the AL East at 87 and 75 with a team. You look at it, you mentioned the innings that they went last year, Steve. Yeah, Masahiro Tanaka with 154 innings pitched. Of course, we know what happened there with some injuries and things like that. Yeah, Pineda, him having issues staying on the field at times, 160 innings pitched. Nate Eovaldi, 154 innings pitched, 14-3 on the season. He was their leader win-wise. He was big for them, and it was just amazing that it seems like every time he went out there, they scored a ton of runs for him. He gave up 5 runs, 8 scored 7, so he definitely had great run support. And you have CeCe Sabathia, who had 167 innings pitched last year in what was probably the worst season of his career, and which is hard to watch, and it's hard for him to go out there and do that because he's such a competitor. Then you have Ivan Nova, who's going to try to work in to get that, try to get into the rotation somehow. Pitched 94 innings last year, coming off Tommy John as well. Not the Ivan Nova we saw before, but again, similar story to Matt Moore, just didn't look comfortable, not all the way back yet. You have Masahiro Tanaka, who is slated to be ready for the start of the season. and they obviously need him. He's going to be their ace. You have Severino, Steve, who's very interesting. 62 innings last year with 56 strikeouts, 289 ERA. This guy has been labeled untouchable. And this is one of those guys that they're banking their future on big time. And he did have 161 and two-thirds combined innings last year between the majors and minor league ball. So he did have some workload on him. They're going to try to get him a little higher, obviously. But they're going to be cautious with him as well. Right now, he's slotted as their number two guy. That's the projected depth chart on CBS Sports. I think the biggest loss for them, Steve, before we get into that bullpen again, is Greg Bird. And Greg Bird played only a portion of the season last year, had some big hits for them, some big home runs, 11 home runs in 46 games, 31 RBIs, 26 runs scored, 261 average. But a guy who did give him flexibility because they have a lot of age on that team, Mark Teixeira, Chase Headley, Alex Rodriguez, Brian McCann. You know, there's only so much you can mix these guys up. You're probably going to have to bring Beltran to play first every so often, have him DH. There's a lot of things that Girardi has to do that a lot of people don't see, but this is a team that can still score some runs even with that age. But that bullpen, man, Steve, you want me to run down the stats real quick?
Yeah, go ahead. I know where you're going with it.
It's scary. Dellin Betances, 150 ERA, 131 strikeouts and 84 innings pitched. Andrew Miller, 204 ERA, 100 strikeouts, 61 innings pitched. You have Haroldis Chapman with the Cincinnati Reds. This is almost like video game stats. 116 strikeouts in 66 innings pitched, 163. So the strategy that Brian Cashman built here, and of course, getting Chapman was almost done luck because of what happened. Obviously, you don't wish for something like that to happen for a trade to get nixed, but it is what it is. That's what makes baseball, and that's what makes life. Having that, if a guy can go even five innings, if you have somebody like CeCe Sabathia, who you don't think could give you a lot of depth, if he can go five innings, give up a run or two, get a quality start, even give up three runs, you have a guy that can slot into the sixth inning. Then you have seventh, eighth, ninth, and these are guys who are not afraid to pitch. Talking about Dellin Betances, 84 innings pitched last year. That's not chump change for a reliever, especially for a guy who's young and throws heavy. He throws hard. All three of these guys can close. So if the Yankees have some misfortune, one of these guys get hurt, or even two of these guys get hurt, they still have depth there where a third guy can come in and close and get the job done. And that's very impressive.
It is. You ran down the stats, and these guys are three of the top five relievers in Major League Baseball with a strikeout rate, that's 10 or above. And you know, these guys, they don't put the ball in play very often at the back end. So any one of these three guys can come into a tough situation and get a strikeout when needed if however the lineup plays out, if it's Miller coming in the seventh inning or if it's Betances coming in the seventh inning, they can limit the innings in the bullpen with these guys to like three hitters. You don't have to overextend these guys, which during the course of a year, I think will cut down on Betances' innings. There's a lot of times that Joe Girardi used them two innings and one plus, and you're not going to have to do that. I mean, you're going to be able to give him enough time and enough rest in between outings, and that's just going to save these guys' arms towards the end of the year when they're really going to need them the most, I think, because I really do think that this team has the ability, even though they're a little bit older, to compete in the AL division with the Blue Jays.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I certainly expect this team to compete throughout the whole year. Again, the loss of Greg Bird hurts, but as long as they have guys like Mark Teixeira, who I believe is in the final year of his contract, Steve, am I correct in that?
I believe you're right. I think the depth hurts, with Teixeira, with Bird being out and having mm-hmm. his shoulder sculpted and being put on the 60-day DL. I just mm-hmm. I think they wanted to kind of mix him in a little bit more with Teixeira to give him some off days and kind of limit his availability to maximize his most potential, because he's getting up there in age as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Mark Teixeira is obviously in the later years of his career, 1,254 career runs batted in, 394 career home runs, obviously the most prolific hitter one of the most prolific hitters in this era, even with all the great first basemen we've seen. Mark Teixeira is in the last year of his contract now. He's going to be earning a base of, what is it, $22.5 million. So he's going to work hard this year. He works hard every year, you would imagine, although we heard some grumblings from different sources. But irrespective of that, this is the year for him to say that he can still do this. He can do it on the for a longer-term contract and a 1 or 2 year deal. So he's playing for a lot here. And in the 111 games last year, again, 31 home runs. You prorate that somewhere in the mid-40s. So still has a lot of power, even with that short porch. Switch hitter, great glove, and obviously a very presentable guy. It's not one of the guys going to give a lot of trouble from even those some of the grumblings that we've heard. So at any rate, that is the New York Yankees. Let's just get into a couple quick signings. Mike Minor, 2-year, $7.5 million deal. He missed all of the season in 2015 due to injury, signing with the Kansas City Royals. I do like this signing, Steve. Gives him a left-hander there that can do some different things for them, can be a spot starter for them, and is going to obviously compete for a starting rotation job, but looks to be he's going to be more of a bullpen long relief guy. I do like that signing. Of course, we spoke about Gallardo, 3-year, $35 million deal. Dexter Fowler could be bringing up the rear soon, too. So Casey Jansen, Jeremy Guthrie, Tony Sanchez, and a couple others get minor league deals. Brian Dunsing, another one of those guys. And the one that I know you might be more excited about, Juan Uribe signing a 1-year, $5 million deal, which means, Steve, my response to you the other day when you wrote that to me is that means the Indians are getting to the playoffs this year, just based on that.
Yeah, I mean, we hope. You know, I think it's a tremendous sign. You know, he's turning 37 this year, but, you know, he's the ability to play a solid third base and really give a boost to the offensive thump in the lineup from the right side. And that's something that, you know, the Indians have been looking for the past couple of years. So, you know, a 1-year deal, I think it works out well for everybody. It gives, you know, one of the third basemen, Gio Urshela, maybe some opportunity to go to AAA and continue to progress in what he's doing. He's a great defensively, but he just needs to continue to develop, you know, his power and his hitting. So, you know, great sign, and looking forward to watching Juan Uribe play this year.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And with that is the conclusion of our AL East breakdown. So now we have three divisions covered, Steve. That means halfway there, halfway home, so to speak. So we have the AL Central, we have the NL East, and the AL East as well. So the Eastern divisions are completely done, which means that we have the NL Central, which is going to be a great conversation. We have the NL West, which is going to be another great conversation, and the AL West, which is going to be a great conversation. So there's a little bit of a theme there. And the reason I say that is because there's been a lot of change in those divisions, and the teams that didn't create a lot of change there, it's for a reason. So we've seen some teams that aren't typically active in the offseason, like the San Francisco Giants, get really busy this year, signing guys like Johnny Cueto, signing guys like Jeff Samardzija, trying to bolster that team that almost made it to the playoffs last year, Steve, despite my hating on them, thinking that they weren't going to go anywhere last year with all the age issues that they've had and all the injuries and inconsistencies and things like that. They found many ways to tell me to shut up throughout the season and just almost snipped the playoffs. So we have much more to talk about, obviously, as the weeks go on in our annual team-by-team, division-by-division analysis. And then, of course, we start talking about the regular issues, and we'll see if Ian Desmond ends up getting signed before spring training really gets fully on the way and the games start going. So, Steve, what do you think the odds on that are?
Yeah, I'm going to be curious to see where Ian Desmond ends up. I mean, I think that he's kind of backed himself into a corner. You know, obviously we all know, and we talked about the long-term deal he turned down from the Washington Nationals last year, wanting to test the free agent market, and now he has to reestablish himself and see if he can kind of climb out of that hole. So, you know, not very many people want to give up a draft pick, and he's kind of caught a little bit, but he'll end up somewhere. Something will happen in spring training if he doesn't sign by then, and if a shortstop goes down, or maybe if a team wants him to play third base, you know, he'll take the opportunity to sign and reestablish his market value for free agency after the year.
Mm-hmm. And as we spoke about before, it's going to have to be a long, shorter term deal, maybe with more money than he would have gotten over a longer term deal on an annualized basis. But he has to take a shorter deal, I believe, and obviously you believe the same, Steve, to reestablish his value and do what he needs to do, show that he's not a guy who's error prone and attitude's not there, things like that. He's got to show a lot of stuff this year, whomever ends up signing him. I think actually, as weird as it sounds, I think the Nationals will bring him back as they have another year for Trey Turner to do what they to develop. They have Daniel Murphy who's going to be there at second base. He can't be a shortstop for them. That would be a disaster. That's again going to be interesting to watch. And of course, we'll be here at the front line to tell you what ends up happening with that. And with that, that wraps up this week's show. So it's time for our last licks. And Steve, I'd love for you to do the honors and lead it off.
All right. Well, my last lick this week is one where I came across a story. I read an article the other day, and it kind of, you know, just kind of touched me a little bit on CC Sabathia and what he's going through. And, you know, I think it's been well established that he left the team last year prior to the end of the season and the playoffs and whatnot, that he was going in and he was going to AA to get help on getting sober, and he was taking responsibility for his actions that happened a couple times off of the field. And you know, I just think it's a big thing for young kids to look up to some of these athletes. I mean, we say sometimes that athletes are not role models and we shouldn't be role models, or some guys act like that. And for him to do what he did and to put his family first, to put his life first, and have his family, you know, respect the decision that he made, I just thought it was a real touching story. And I just wish CC the best in his recovery, first and foremost off the field. But I know he's trying to come back and help the Yankees win this year. So, best of luck to him on the field as well. But continue the battle with staying sober and, living a healthy lifestyle and being around for your children and watching them grow to be great adults and have a role model in yourself for your family and for your children.
Mm-hmm. It's a very touching, very powerful last lick, Steve. Hard to follow that one up for sure. And you are right. There's a lot of guys that said that they don't want to be role models, even though they're kind of pushed into that kind of mold. And Ken Griffey Jr. is one of the more notables. I don't want to be a role model, telling parents that they have to raise their own kids and they shouldn't, that an athlete or somebody on TV should not be the ones raising them. So there's a lot of validity to that as well. But at the end of the day, it's about taking on responsibility for your own actions and at home and being able to control things at home. So it's a fantastic lick for sure. My last lick is going to stay on the topic of baseball and what spring training means to me. Steve and I are working on a project right now, and I'm doing a lot of research for this project, and we're going back and forth chatting about it. It's a super fun project. We'll talk about it soon. I'm not saying that too, so you'll tune in and, hey, what are they doing? It's not that kind of teaser, but I don't want to spoil it either. But it's a very cool project that we're working on, and when I'm going through this, thinking about baseball, I'm thinking about myself and reliving a lot of stories that I've had, and I've never played professionally, unfortunately, but I've had a lot of stories playing with my brother, playing with my friends and all that stuff. And every time we talk about baseball, I get choked up, but it takes me to a place that makes me happy. And it makes me so happy that I don't want to stop talking about it. That's why I have a hard time shutting up on this show sometimes, but it's a great outlet to talk about it. Sports, we're seeing with spring training, Steve, you see it every day. Not just your on the field work and off the field work with the Indians franchise, but you're seeing people flocking to see these guys practice, and these guys are being loose and doing things that they normally don't do during the regular season. They're being kids again. And it's a special thing. It's a special feeling to be able to see that. And the fact that we have social media and we have so many other things that go viral, you get to see these guys really let loose and show themselves as who they are, which is kids playing a game. And let's never forget that when we look at baseball. Yes, it's a business, Steve. Everybody knows that. But at the end of the day, it's a game. It's a game that means a lot to so many people. It's a refuge and an escape for so many people. Just be able to turn the game on, listen to it on the radio. They disappear from the world, it just seems like. And sports has a very powerful pull and a uniting force about it. So let's never forget that, that sports has the ability to do that for us. And my other second last take, if I can steal another one, is we don't get political on the show, but I want to pay my respects to the late Antonin Scalia, a Supreme Court justice, who's done a lot for this country in upholding the Constitution that we love so dearly. And again, we're not going to get political here. That's not what we do. But obviously a big loss for the country, big loss for Supreme Court, a guy who had a lot of knowledge of our founding and the great history of this country. And he loved it so much, and he's been able to connect with so many people on both sides of the aisle, and that's a very special thing as well. So again, I guess the theme of my last licks is unity and being able to come together around the common thing and some sort of commonality, whether it's sports or something else. So those are my last licks, and I'm going to be completely frank. I made them up as I went along, and I wanted it to be that way. Again, I guess that wraps up this week's show, Steve.
Yeah, absolutely. Great last lick. And just one of those things where sometimes, you know, things just come to you and the last licks just kind of come out and it's great. But another fantastic show, another great guest, a lot of great insight. And, ultimately we continue on. Next week we will pick another division. Stay tuned and find out what division we pick on our site. And I know that we love having everybody. We love having you listen. And we always love your feedback. So continue to listen and have a tremendous weekend, rest of your weekend, and get ready to enjoy some spring training baseball, which is coming up very soon.
Absolutely. And again, thanks all for listening. Stay tuned to carsaintakid.com for more details on who our guest is going to be next week and the division that we'll be recapping team by team, division by division. It's great. We have only three left. That means we have three done. You can check out those archives again at carsaintakid.com. We're on iTunes, Stitcher, Blog Talk Radio, TuneIn, everywhere that you want to pick up audio, listen to baseball, we're there. So you can't get away from us. You might as well listen to us. But we do appreciate all the feedback that we get. And it's been an amazing run. We're going to continue that as we get into spring training. So much more to talk about. It's an ever-evolving game, and we'll be here to cover the evolution of it. Steve, have a great remainder of the weekend. Obviously, you and I will be in contact, and we'll be on again next week to do another live show.
Absolutely. Everybody have a great night, great weekend. Tune in next week, and look forward to having you. Have a good night.
Absolutely. Take care.